The riders looked down upon the crossings, and it seemed strange to them, for the fords had ever been a place full of the rush and chatter of water upon stones, but now they were silent. The beds of the stream were almost dry, a bare waste of shingles and gray sand. "This has become a dreary place," said Amr. "What sickness has befallen the river? Many fair things Saruman has destroyed. Has he devoured the springs of Isen too?" "So it would seem," said Gandalf.
Welcome to A Sacred Fellowship, where we are reading the works of J.R.R. Tolkien using sacred practices. We're using these texts to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions. We believe that through reading classics like The Lord of the Rings as sacred, we will learn to treat one another as sacred.
Oh, I like the idea of reading each other. We can read each other. It's part of it. And this is episode 53. And I know last week I said it was 51. I can't count. This is episode 53. We had already celebrated, anyway, 53, where your host, Catherine Olson, and myself, Lorianne Schwenk, will be discussing the 8th chapter in The Treason at Isengard, The Road to Isengard, through the theme of interdependence. Take a seat on that great rubble heap or in your car and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred, and we are glad you're here to continue building community with us.
I think I'll pass up that rubble heap. It doesn't seem very comfortable.
Well, if you have enough pipeweed from the South Farthing, you might be fine. It's always fun in each chapter to pick some location.
Yeah. Well, some of the chapters will not be that fun, but, you know, Isengard in ruins is better than anything we can think of in the last couple of chapters.
Right. Oh, my gosh. So how are you? I haven't really actually even talked to you much in the past week. So give me your dungeon and your tower.
Well, my tower is that last week we settled everything to explain with my side job as an arts reviewer, we occasionally get invited to specific events or festivals rather than looking for opportunities to go to them. And one of these things was that in 2020, we were asked to take a staff down to the Utah Shakespeare Festival for a week. And obviously that didn't work out because it was 2020. But last week, we actually made contact with them again, and I am now set up to go down for 3 days in July and see a bunch of plays, including my favorite, The Pirates of Penzance, which is not Utah Shakespeare Festival, but they always do something musical for fun.
Oh, fantastic.
And my dungeon is that, honestly, I have had so many things to do this weekend that I haven't been outside much, and it's lovely weather, so I wish I had taken time to be outside more.
Okay. So my dungeon at this point is hard to say because of what my tower will be. So what I'm going to do instead is just respond, because one thing that was really fun for me is that you asked about great places to eat for the Shakespeare Festival. And that was something where not only did I have an answer, but my cousin had an answer. And it was kind of cool because you and I haven't met yet, and yet we're drawing ever closer. Maybe I'll come see some of those plays. We'll see.
And that would or maybe be you should visit our mutual friends in Utah Valley.
yes. Oh, I'll do it all. And that is my actual tower. So I'm skipping the dungeon altogether this week. I am on the road. So I am hundreds of miles from home, looking at the Pacific Ocean from a totally different point of view. And it's wonderful. And I've got a friend visiting. It's our vaccination vacation. We are both safe and full of antibodies. So we decided to take a little trip together. And the last thing we did in 2020 was take a trip together. So it's really nice to do that. So I am potting to you from a different place. I hope it doesn't sound any different, but that is my tower, and I'm just going to pass on the dungeon altogether this week.
Well, after last week's dungeon, I think you can earn a slightly more prominent tower than usual.
Yes, thank you. And part of the best part of the podcast is actually interdependence. We help each other. We take turns recording, doing the notes, coming up with the themes. So It is my turn to tell a story, or stellatory, but I will tell a story about interdependence this week. And it's one of my favorite topics. And I thought for a long time about different things. And then finally, one of my favorites, and this is just going to go really far for some people maybe, but hopefully not too much. I used to live in a nice hot climate where I could grow tons of tomatoes. And I would buy, you know, flat would have 72 tomato plants. I'd buy two flats. And so I had my 144 little babies in the ground. And all of a sudden, all these flea beetles were decimating them. And my first thought was, how do I kill or get rid of the flea beetles so my tomatoes can make a chance? And I talked to my beloved uncle, who is no longer with us, after celebrating his 101st birthday. He did fine. Or more than that, maybe. Anyway, a good long life. But I talked to him, and he said, you know, the flea beetles were put here for a reason. Why don't you ask them? This is the part that's going a little far. But I actually did. I gave myself a little quiet to think about it. And I realized they wouldn't go after plants unless the plants were stressed. So here's the interdependence. Could I work with the flea beetles in some way so that they'd leave the tomatoes alone until they were tall enough? Because that's what I found out. Once the tomatoes are tall enough, the flea beetles can't damage them anymore. And then I found out mint deters flea beetles. What did I have in the plot next to the tomatoes? Piles of mint. Mint I had tried to get rid of, which only got encouraged every time I cut it back. And so this little team of me and the mint, which I boiled into gallons and gallons of tea, which I then watered the tomatoes. It deterred the flea beetles. I fed the tomatoes because they were stressed. I fed them. And once they grew to be about a foot tall, I had no more problems with the flea beetles. So here was kind of an interdependence, but the flea beetles needed to do what they needed to do. And I could do something that could benefit them instead of wiping them out. And so many examples of teams working together are still something where one thing benefits, not everyone. And so it was fun to think of something where the tomatoes benefited, the mint benefited, I benefited, and even the flea beetles benefited. So there's my cute little story on interdependence.
Well, that story just proves that in spite of your dislike for all things mushroom, you are a hobbit, because I am not someone who loves a good tilled earth. I do in principle, but my roommate is really the gardener in our apartment.
Wonderful. Now I live in a foggy place and I can't grow tomatoes, so it changes what I do. But at any rate, that is where we are with interdependence. And I know I haven't written anything for the second breakfast, but folks can still comment on the essays that are there. So would you remind folks how to find those?
Absolutely. Our second breakfast is one of the main options for navigating our website, www.asacredfellowship.com. Just go to the second breakfast section, or at the bottom, there's an archive of posts, and it'll let you see what we posted recently if you really want to know. But everything on there so far has just been delightful. So I hope you read on, and please write some responses to it. We are always looking for more notes from the Shire, and that's one of the places where we reap them.
Wonderful. Yes, we'd love to hear from folks. You can also email us at asacredfellowship@gmail.com. Let us know how we're doing and what you're thinking of the texts. So shall we talk about the theme in the chapter?
Well, I do wonder, you mentioned in your little notes to the other person in this Ashar, the gammers might have some reflections on terms, or do you have any for this week?
That is true. The gammers do indeed. And there's just a couple. Actually, the only things I looked up were the words copper and iron. So I didn't ask for a lot from the gammers, because they really worked hard for us last week. I mean, half of them. I mean, they had so many words. So I just was interested because, of course, what we know about Saruman is he's a maker, and he is gone industrial. He has really kind of perverted the idea of making things in some ways in the view of Middle Earth. And there was some mention of marble, copper, and iron. So I looked up copper, and sure enough, that is the old English German word for this element. It is element number 29. It is very good at conducting electricity, and that's why our houses mostly are full of them. The Latin is cuprum, and that comes from the Greek Cyprian, from Cyprus. So there's a nice little word trail for that. And I love the name Cyprian, and there's there's an ancient Saint Cyprian, so that's somebody I love. So I think, I wonder why he got that name then. Mm-hmm. I wonder, did he have red hair, or or was his speech fiery or something? So there was that. And then I looked up iron, which the Latin, of course, is the Fe, which is what the chemical ferrum symbol is. This is ferrum, element number 26. And this is where I feel like, I imagine everybody knows this, but this was new to me. So the Gammers told me that, yes, I-R-E-N is the Old English, but there's also a variant for iron, I-S-E-N.
Mm-hmm.
Ding, 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 ding. So I was very, very excited to find that. There is possibly a Proto-Indo-European root, Isero, I-S-E-R-O, which means powerful and holy. And so that was very fascinating. I encourage everyone themselves to go to the Gondorian libraries and look up iron. It is a really interesting, interesting path. So those were the main two words that jumped out at me for this week. So the Gammers had a quieter week. They didn't have to research. They didn't have to pull down all the books from the shelves this week.
Oh, good. So we can leave something for future chapters.
Exactly, exactly. But I'm very excited to know that Isengard had such an exciting meaning.
Yes. I was going to let you go first, but as long as you're asking, it was the first paragraph. Same. So it was that in the light of a fair morning, King Theoden and Gandalf the White Rider met again upon the green grass beside the deeping stream. There was also Aragorn, son of the Arathorn, and Legolas the Elf, and Erkenbrand of Westfold, and the lords of the Golden House. About them were gathered the Rohirrim, the riders of the Mark. Wonder overcame their joy and victory, and their eyes were turned towards the wood. Suddenly there was a great shout, and down from the dike came those who had been driven back into the deep. There came Gamling the Old, and Éomer, son of Éomund. And beside them walked Gimli the Dwarf. He had no helm, and about his head was a linen band stained with blood, but his voice was loud and strong. 42, Master Legolas, he cried. Alas, my neck is notched. The 42nd had an iron collar on his neck. How is it with you? You have passed my score by one, answered Legolas, but I do not grudge you the game. So glad am I to see you on your legs.
Yes. Well, I just see that whole listing of everybody there, right at the beginning, Théoden, Gandalf, et cetera, et cetera. And then the trees. And so I see the interdependence. They needed all of these players to achieve this victory. Mm-hmm. Where else did you see interdependence in that?
Well, it almost reminds me, as I've mentioned a couple of times, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And at the end of the Return of the Jedi, when the Empire has finally, I hope this isn't a spoiler, been defeated, they have this grand party with the Ewok village, and you see pretty much a almost family reunion of the rebellion as they come together to both recognize what they have been able to achieve, and they're looking for people they have potentially lost. And so it reminds me of this idea that in any victory, you have to have a reckoning. And so the interdependence in that is one of sharing knowledge for me.
Right. Yes. I love that. Sharing the knowledge. That is wonderful. And then they are going to head towards Isengard, and then some are going to head towards Edoras, because the ultimate fight, of course, will be to the east. And so Théoden bids all men, young and old, to come in haste to Edoras. So I hear that as some of the interdependence there, that everyone is needed to work together to achieve this. But then at the end of that little passage, with Gandalf would go Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli. In spite of his hurt, the dwarf would not stay behind. It was only a feeble blow, and the cap turned it, he said. It would take more than such an orc scratch to keep me back. Aragorn says, I will tend it while you rest.
Mm.
Oh, interdependence.
And again, to pre-quote things, the hands of the king are the hands of the healer.
Yes, exactly.
So this is still putting Aragorn on the path to his true destiny as hopefully returning to the king throne of Gondor.
Right, exactly. And then I love that there is this immediate, I don't know if you'd call it amnesty, for the hillmen. Would you call that an amnesty or whatever? I think I would, but they're also given a job to do.
Well, I think it shows a great understanding and great perspective on the part of the King of the Golden Hall and everyone who is associated with this action, because there are certainly people who were involved in this attack on Helm's Deep and on the Westfold who are culpable for certain crimes, but there are also those who were given no other choice. And I think the hillmen are really under the second category, and that is why they are given a purpose. And it is not necessarily enthralling or enslaving them. It is turning them away from the thing that they felt they were unable to do anything but that, and giving mm-hmm. them a righteous and a wholesome purpose.
So do you think they had no responsibility for what they were doing? I know there is, isn't there some line a bit that they had been bewitched or something, but looks with the evil. Well, at least they've been lied to. You've been deluded. So not bewitched necessarily. You've been deluded by Saruman. Saruman had told them that the men of Rohan were cruel and burned their captives alive. So they were, you know, not necessarily responsible for the things they did, and they didn't plan this attack. They were pawns in this attack. Would you say that was right?
I hate to like reference everything back to some kind of World War One history or World War Two, but really, this calls to mind the development of the Third Reich, in which a lot of the things that were put into place in terms of the laws and the atrocities were responses to what the people were led to believe about who was responsible for the rise of the Weimar Republic and the inflation that it caused so much economic devastation between the First and Second World War. And they had to be given someone to hate and someone to blame and just something to act against. And that was something that a lot of them truly believed was the fault of a certain race of people, unfortunately, right. But it was something that was very effective in marshaling an army and turning of people against itself. And so I think that they were deluded in terms of the hillmen in a similar way, that they saw their own suffering or they saw their own injustice and needed a good enemy, as they often say.
Wouldn't it be interesting if everyone who thought some party was responsible for all the woes had to then do something for that party, mm-hmm. for that group somehow, because it didn't just happen, as you know, in the Second World War. And I'm not going to list more examples because I think more recent examples can be third rail, but it is still happening. It didn't stop in 1945.
I will say that I think this is a prime example of we should have some accountability in the Black Lives Matter movement for those who have brought about it, the things that they are acting or protesting against. That's all I will say. I'm going to leave it as political as that and no further.
And I don't even think that's political. I think that's civic. So there you are. Yeah. But thank you. But this is how to repair the evil in which you have joined. Oh, I was thinking about how we open the podcast, where we talk about how are we to treat one another after we've read these texts and looked at them in this deep way. And, you know, maybe it's something I need to look at for myself. When have I blamed someone else for my problems or something when maybe they needed my help or I had, and maybe now I have something that I could do for them. So it's just something that has struck me, because I don't think anybody's ever totally innocent. I don't think the hillmen are completely innocent, but they were certainly deluded and misinformed and badly educated by somebody that until recently everyone trusted. I mean, he's a Meyer. So can't blame them. So
well, I'm going to go back a couple of pages to kind of draw what I think might be a stretch of an association, but Theoden says, in the dark hour before dawn, I doubted, but we will not part now. I will come with you. And so I think that if he were to see the people of Dunland and the Hillmen as people who were doubting in the dark before the dawn, in times when they were in a turmoil, they looked towards something that could give them relief. And once they found that there was something that they could do, they were overly motivated to actually take action.
Okay. I like that. No, I don't think that's a stretch at all. And I have to make a note that Hama dies. I'm sorry about that. I was just saying, what a good man. A good person. So that is sad. And as little as we know about him, it's enough to make him special. So.
Yeah, it was for me all about his loyalty, but also his discernment and his interactions mm-hmm. with Gandalf that stood against what the king was telling him, but what he knew to be good for his kingdom.
Right, right.
So there's my eulogy for Hama.
There you go. Very well, very well. So then we have this absolutely wonderful conversation between Legolas and Gimli. And I see some interdependence there because Gimli loves the caves that he has found, that Gandalf announces are the caves of Aglarond, Aglarond meaning glory, the glittering caves. Mm-hmm. And it's not enough for him to want to be there or see them. He wants his friend to see them with him. And Legolas does not want to see caves, but wishes to share Fangorn with Gimli. And so the two come to agree. And they come to say, I will go with you to the one if you will go with me to the other. And mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm repeating myself, but I just love that they feel that need to show their friend. And I know that feeling. I know mm-hmm. that feeling. Oh. I had a moment one time, I remember I was out at night and I saw a shooting star and I turned to my left and said, did you see that? But I was alone.
Oh,
this was a long time ago. And I happened to be alone, but that was my impulse. So I just really related to that. So there I am. And how about that description?
Of which one?
Of the caves. Can I just read
it? Oh, please read it because I'm pulling it up and I'm like, you're going to identify it even better.
The light glows through folded marbles, shell-like, translucent as the living hands of Queen Galadriel. There are columns of white and saffron and dawn rose, Legolas, fluted and twisted into dreamlike forms.
Hmm.
I mean, we could read the whole thing. But wow. It's just beautiful writing. And I kind of didn't know Gimli had that much poetry in him. So I love it. He is so moved by this and wants so much to share it with his friend.
Well, it even reminds me of the descriptions of the Dwarodelf and in Moria, where you see the great under the misty mountain city of the dwarves.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment when Gimli walks into those ancient halls is really a moment of recognizing corruption, where this is something where he sees as beautiful. But mm-hmm. it is also something that he has had a part in saving. And so it's even more precious to him, I feel like.
Right. And I love how he says that if the dwarves could be in there, we would tend these glades of flowering stone, not quarry them. With cautious mm-hmm. skill, tap by tap, a small chip of rock and no more perhaps in a whole anxious day. So we could work. And as the years went by, we should open up new ways and display far chambers that are still dark. So just. That appreciation for things, which I think is a theme going through the story altogether, of learning to appreciate Arda and learning to appreciate its own life and gifts,
mm-hmm.
And not just as commodities. So,
I agree with you that with that being an interwoven theme in the whole series.
Which is why the next visual adaptation needs Tom Bombadil. Okay. That might be more political than anything. So, where did you next find interdependence?
For me, it was with Gandalf and Theoden, and Theoden's hesitance in understanding what exactly the Ents are versus the trees and what the danger is. You have seen Enso, King Ents out of Fangorn Forest, in which you call the Entwood. Did you think that the name was given only in idle fancy? Nay, Athedon, it isn't otherwise. To them you are but the passing tale. All the years from Erold the Young to Theoden the Old are of little count to them, and all the deeds of your house are but a small matter. Mm-hmm. And then the king, after a little bit, says, out of the shadows of legend, I begin to begin a little to understand the marvel of the trees, I think. I have lived to see strange days. Long have we tended our beasts, built our houses, wrought our tools, or ridden away to help in the wars of Minas Tirith, and that we hold the life of men the way of the world. We cared little for what lay beyond the borders of our land. Songs we have heard that tell of these things, but we are forgetting them, teaching them only to children as a careless custom. And now the songs have come down among us out of strange places and walk visible under the sun.
And well, I think and kind of, next sorry, line, keep on going. Let me just say that, sorry, you are not without allies, even if you know them not. So that to me was the interdependence kind of summary of that whole speech. But yes, and again, that whole theme as well, learning to appreciate these things on Arda.
Yeah, Saiden is one who I feel like he's almost quick to make amends for in misinterpretations, because he does it in the King of the Golden Hall and he does it here in the Journey to Isengard. And I think it's one of his greatest virtues is that he's capable of recognizing the need for an advanced sense of understanding very quickly, where some people would be a little more bullheaded than that.
Right, right, exactly. Just another beautiful sentence. The slow moon mounted, now waxing towards the full, and in its cold silver light, the swelling grasslands rose and fell like a wide gray sea. Just had to say that. But now we come to this empty river. I love it. And then what else? Where else did you find interdependence?
Going forward a couple of pages, they being the writers of Rohan, they camped beside the bed of the Isen River. It was still silent and empty. Some of them slept a little, but late in the night the watchman cried out and all awoke. The moon was gone, stars were shining above, but over the ground there crept a darkness blacker than the night. On both sides of the river it rolled towards them, going northward. Stay where you are, said Gandalf. Draw no weapons. Wait, and it will pass you by. A mist gathered around them. Above them, a few stars still glimmered faintly, but on either side there rose walls of impenetrable gloom. They were in a narrow lane between moving towers of shadow. Voices they heard, whisperings and groanings, and an endless rustling sigh. The earth shook under them. Long it seemed to them that they sat and were afraid, but at last the darkness and rumor passed and vanished between the mountain's arms. Away south from the Hornburg, in the middle of the night, men heard a great noise as a wind in the valley, and the ground trembled, and all were afraid, and no one ventured to go forth. But in the morning, they went out and were amazed, for the slain orcs were gone, and the trees also. And so I love that it does take some people some prompting not to act rashly or to fear prematurely, but it is something where they are growing to not immediately react to what they perceive as gloom or darkness, and to wait for further information. And I don't know if there is anyone at the Hornburg who has a similar admonition to these people as what Gandalf had, but we know that these people were patient and did not venture forth. And the reward is, of course, that the trees have gone and taken the orcs with them.
Right. And so what is this shadow, this mist?
I don't think it's exactly described. I mean, it seems to be a supernatural power, but in terms of actual, like, I don't know the word for it. In terms of a classification of the magic, it's not described any more clearly than that, as far as I can recall so far.
I wonder then, is it the passing of the orcs, or them disappearing or something? I wonder, some expression, or the trees have devoured them and then need to exhale them or something. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just blown away.
The reason why I laughed slightly was because I'm trying to imagine trees metabolizing things and breathing out of oxygen.
Well, they do.
They really do. It's just, I can't imagine trees taking deep breaths like they're about to do a, well, for lack of a better reference to yoga, a tree pose.
Sure, a tree pose. Right, right. When the river is still empty, they are talking a little bit earlier, must we pass this way where the carrion beasts devour so many good riders of the mark? Mm-hmm. And I saw that as interdependence in a way, because the carrion beasts serve a purpose. However, Gandalf later says, friends have labored here. So in Ayat, a mound mm-hmm. was piled, ringed with stones. So here lies all the men of the mark that fell near this place. So it, in this whole scene, this whole eerie scene, we have this sense that they are not alone, and there's forces they don't necessarily know or understand that have taken care of whatever, whatever needed to be taken care of. All right. They were revenged upon the orcs. Mm-hmm. All right, for the Ents. And then a little farther along then is a place that was not interdependence. And so this is beneath the walls of Isengard. There still were acres tilled by the slaves of Saruman. So as long as they're slaves, it is not mutually beneficial. But most of the valley had become a wilderness of weeds and thorns. So it's not a wild place that would be hospitable for much life or even for humans to survive from. Brambles trailed upon the ground, or clambering over bush and bank made shaggy caves where small beasts housed. No trees grew there, but among the rank grasses could still be seen the burned and axe-hewn stumps of ancient groves. It was a sad country, silent now, but for the stony noise of quick waters. So it's just sad. It is environmental terrorism, and it is clearly not working to create interdependence with the landscape. And it is just sad. And it reminds me of the images of what we're doing to the Amazon, all in the name of a hamburger.
Yeah. Well, it also, the part where it said it, there still were acres tilled by the slaves of Saruman, but most of the valley had become a wilderness of weeds and thorns. I'm seeing this hard, backbreaking work of the people who are under the thrall of Saruman, but they are never able to cultivate. They are never allowed to actually make a life for themselves in this valley. And later on, it actually, one of the parts that I highlighted and said, many houses there were, chambers, halls, and passages cut and tunneled back into the walls upon their inner side. And so that all of the open circle was overlooked by countless windows and dark doors. Thousands could dwell there, workers, servants, slaves, and warriors with great stone store of arms. So we have this wide expanse where there is possibility for people to cultivate the land, where it has been tilled, but it has not been sown. And there is nothing growing there other than brambles and weeds and such things. And then we have these thousands of places where people could have made their homes, and instead it is inhabited so sparsely because of this absolute lack of interdependence, this absolute tyranny of Isengard. And that really does lead to the theme of this entire section of the book, the treason of Isengard.
Right, right. Anything else for you that you picked out?
I'm getting to the Hobbit section. I don't know if you have
anything before. I don't have anything before that. So yes, we get to meet Meriadoc and Peregrine again.
Yes. Oh, I love that. Gimli will forever be one of my favorite characters in terms of just, he has a dichotomy to his character that is very honest whenever he opens his mouth. And my favorite part of
Hammer and Tongs.
Hammer and Tongs, I am so torn between rage and joy that if I do not burst, it will be a marvel.
And but so Legolas says, you speak for me.
I don't know. I feel and like it, hammer and tongs is slightly a near curse word in his language for Gimli.
Right, right. Yeah, I did look and notice that it is not, it is an actual phrase. It is not unknown. So it is an English expression, but it's just perfect for a dwarf, of course.
Absolutely.
Their tools. So that is wonderful. And I like the interdependence where the orcs gave Merry and Pippin a job to do. Mm-hmm. They were meant to be wardens of the gate and to greet properly the arrivals. So it is a wonderful end to the chapter. I couldn't wait to get there.
I do have to sympathize with the three hunters who fight 200 leagues through Fenn and Forest, battle and death to rescue you. And here we find you feasting and idling and smoking.
Right. It's wonderful. And it means we have so much more to look forward to in the next chapter. I'm very excited. Yes. Yes.
All right. But my last place in this chapter was towards very close to the end. They're looking for the people who are guarding Orthanc. Mm-hmm. And it says, "It is past noon," said Gandalf, "and we at any rate have not eaten since the early morning, yet I wish to see Treebeard as soon as may be. Did he leave me no message, or has plate and bottle driven it from your mind?" "He left a message," said Merry, "and I was coming to it, but I have been hindered by many other questions. I was to say that if the Lord and the Mark and Gandalf will ride to the northern wall, they will find Treebeard there, and he will welcome them. I will add that they will also find food of the best there. It was discovered and selected by your humble servants." He bowed. Gandalf laughed. "That is better," he said. "Well, then, will you ride with me to find Treebeard? We must go roundabout, but it is not far. When you see Treebeard, you will learn much, for Treebeard is Fangorn and the eldest and chief of the Ents. And when you speak with him, you will hear the speech of the oldest of all living things." So I love that. Gandalf often takes people on a questing of some kind, but it always is for a purpose in terms of taking action. It is a purpose for learning something, and this is no exception. Even with Théoden, who has fought many battles and has ruled justly over his kingdom, he still has a little more to learn.
Just a little more, absolutely. Well, that is beautiful. So are we ready to move into our sacred practice then?
Yes. Will you please tell us about Florilegia?
Yeah, so we are doing Florilegia. So we are going to choose each of us a passage that sparkled for us. And I know I read all that about the glittering caves, but I've got a different place. And we'll share them, we'll explain why we chose them, and then we'll see what they say to us when we put them together. So where is yours? What is yours?
This is when they... Gimli and Aragorn and Gandalf and Legolas have all found the hobbits, and Théoden is responding to this very amusing reunion, and he says, "The days are fated to be filled with marbles, not marbles.
Okay. So I am looking for that. "The day is fated." Oh my goodness, how many paragraphs before the end? I'm sorry, we should talk about this before.
Pages before the end.
Pages.
It's right before. Okay. Are not these the halflings that have some among us called the hobbits on? "Hobbits, if you please, Lord," said Pippin.
Oh, there we are. Yes. Yeah. Okay. The days are fated to be filled with marvels. Why did you choose that?
Because personally, I have a friend who is constantly telling me that the best way to find joy and find a way to express gratitude is to look for the smallest of miracles in our lives, whether it be something that's as simple as the window opened on the first try, or the door was able to keep out the cold, that sort of thing. And so "the days are fated to be filled with marvels" kind of is an exhortation for me to look for the things that are marvelous, such as a meeting of dear friends in this case.
Uh-huh, yes. And so for me, it was "the voice of the river beside them suddenly awoke." And I chose that because this is my first time reading. And so I did not know why the river was empty. I have not seen a film. I didn't know anything about this. I mean, there's so many things you do know just by living and breathing, you know, and in the 21st century, okay, I know Gandalf isn't gone for good after, you know, the Balrog. Okay, I know that. We already know that Frodo's going to make it all the way through because, you know, anyway, so there's, you know, a variety of things that I knew, but I did not know this. And so it was really striking to me when I realized, oh, the water was dammed up for some reason. Now here it is. Whoa, what's going on? So shall I read them together?
Yes.
They really do go well. Yes. The days are fated to be filled with marvels. The voice of the river beside them suddenly awoke. Does anything jump out at you when we read those two in that order?
Actually, what it reminds me of is, I believe this is in Exodus, if it's in Leviticus, or instead I will apologize, but the moment during the wanderings of the children of Israel after they have left Egypt and they are in this desert and have not reached the promised land and will not for many years. Oh. And at that moment, Moses strikes the rock with his staff and it issues forth water. And so it reminds me of how water and the unexpected literal fount of life is something that we can often take for granted, but should not be.
I love that. That's wonderful. Right. I think it's actually twice in the Pentateuch. So it, mm-hmm. it might be Exodus and Leviticus, but, or Numbers. I think it's in Numbers, but we'll look it up later. So I'll read it the other direction now. The voice of the river beside them suddenly awoke. The days are fated to be filled with marvels. And I like that because it almost sounds like the river is the one speaking.
That's what I interpreted it as yeah. well.
And the voice of the river beside them suddenly awoke. The days are fated to be filled with marvels. So perhaps even the river is expressing marvel that it got stopped and now is freed again and flowing. Or perhaps this is the river hinting to those hearing it, oh, you ain't seen nothing yet. What about you? Anything jump out for you?
Again, jumping back quite a bit this time, but do you remember our discussion of a certain knocking thrush in The Hobbit?
Just a bit, yes.
So this thrush who has been prophesied to play a part in the finding of the door into the mountain so far back that it is written in runes on the map that is given to Thorin to find his way into Erebor. And so you have this sense that the thrush or he has been raised to be on hand when this happens, or possibly that the circumstances have conspired as we know all shall prove but mine instrument for Iluvatar. But I think that there are certain forces in this world that definitely have a sense of, I have a purpose here and I will make it known. And the river itself speaking with this voice and fading the days to be filled with marvels have that same sense of destiny.
You do that way better than I do. Thank you. Couldn't do it without you.
And this is why I write essays and you make sense of the normal stuff.
Oh, I'll
I can
be
wax
more,
poetic on a million things and you actually make things interesting to listen to.
Interdependence. Wonderful, yes. Wonderful. Do you have any exhortations for the characters?
Oh, my exhortation is for all of us, but especially the people journeying between the Hornburg and Isengard, to be patient in looking for evil tidings and to instead look for the marbles.
Yeah, oh, I love it. I think mine is to look at that weed, that pipe weed that they found, and peel that back a little bit, go a little deeper on that. Because even I, going through this a first time, have to think that there's something a little fishy that this suddenly has showed up here. So,
yes, but we won't know about it for a little while. I'm not going to tell you more than that, but I'm just snickering because I know exactly.
I know too, but the characters don't, at least at this point on this page. I mean, Gandalf certainly doesn't seem to have realized Saruman's reach at this point. But there's a couple of pennies that need to drop here. So I'm hoping hoping that some light bulbs go on. There I go with the metaphors, just one after the other. So that will be it. Enough hearing from us. We would love to hear from you, and our community is growing stronger every day. We welcome you to our Facebook community that is called A Sacred Fellowship. And we have two questions. So you got to answer those two questions. And mostly they are meant to prove that you're not a robot. So please do. And how else can people reach us?
Well, there is Twitter, where we are A Sacred Fellowship. A Sacred Fellows One. Mm-hmm. And Instagram, they let us use the entire name. So it's A Sacred Fellowship. Terrific. And as always, you can always send us an email to asacredfellowship@gmail.com if you haven't been able to find us elsewhere. But thanks to all of you for keeping our spirits up and our thoughts flowing, as you always do.
And now, we are almost at our first anniversary. So
yes, we are. It's so wonderful.
Yes, I can't believe it.
Well, if you are not aware, and you might not be, since we started this in May and didn't come online until a little bit later, but I was looking at the history of the group the other day, and it said a group created on May 15th, 2020. And so that is obviously coming up on this Saturday, and we are going to be having a little bit of a community project on A Sacred Fellowship. So if you'd like to join in, please find us on our Facebook group and share your thoughts.
But the background of all of that also means that it is time to renew a few of the things. And so we would like to invite folks to be part of our Patreon support. So please sign up for that if you feel so moved at www.patreon.com/asacredfellowship. There are perks. The perks will grow as the Patreons grow. So if you have a little as $2 a month, if you could do that and help us keep this rolling, we would really appreciate that very, very much.
All right, so I do have a note from the Shire. This is sent to us from Phoebe. We were talking about, let me find it. Sorry, I had to find the note itself and then recall exactly what we were discussing, but it had to do with what lessons you've learned about interdependence and whether or not it's a positive or negative force in your experience, or if that changes from time to time. And so I just have to, sometimes it's easy to find my notes, but sometimes they're in a different place and I feel like a fool for not having them immediately on hand. And that is such a point right now. There we go. Okay. Phoebe, right. So many times when I thought I had to do things on my own and it worked so much better in a group. Negatives? None. It really reminds me, because honestly, I just remember barely knowing you from Harry Potter and the Sacred Texts, Facebook common room. And you were saying, you know, I'd love to read The Lord of the Rings sometime. And I said, oh, I'd love to read The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. And all of a sudden I get this invite to join us, this Facebook group, to do just that. And now we have all of these friends that we have never even thought of meeting before, much less reading this. And we are, you know, 1, 2, 3 books into this journey. So of course there are no negatives when you look at the bigger picture.
Well put, well put. And I think that brings us to the end then.
Well, we do have to mention that next week we will be reading the 9th chapter of The Treason at Isengard, Flotsam and Jetsam, which is one of my favorite phrases, through the theme of recovery.
And I think that's another reason why the Gammers took some time off, because they are loaded with Flotsam and Jetsam. They are so excited. Yes. They're like, can we talk about it sooner? No, we have to wait till that chapter. They've got lots of stuff on that. So we are very excited.
Well, in the meantime, I think that brings us to the end. Thank you for spending this time with us. And may Elbereth protect you. Be of good hope. Namarie.
Namarie.